Hey guys, and welcome to a new episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast. I'm your host, Clay, of course, and this week Mark is not here. He had to take some personal time off. Of course, if you saw on Twitter, he is currently with his dad, had a little bit of surgery. He is okay, as far as I know. That is all good. And so I'm going to have to talk the podcast alone, all alone. I was going to have Juice, my co-host on the Batman News Weekly podcast, here with me this week, but our schedules just didn't line up very well this week. So instead, I'm going to be doing it alone. And I have done an episode alone for you guys before when Mark was away, but there wasn't really anything to talk about that week. And there is a lot to talk about this week. First off, you know, last episode, I did talk about how comic books were still happening. The entertainment business was still happening. Well, I just put my foot in my mouth, because we all know that Diamond, the distributor for comic books, all of comic books, that being Marvel, DC, Boom Studios, Image, Action Lab, everything under the sun, they're pretty much a monopoly of the distribution process of comics, which is a little weird, but they are not distributing books anymore due to the coronavirus pandemic, and it's a good thing. I know that a lot of people are upset. A lot of people still want that, you know, want to be able to read while they are in quarantine. And, you know, we were struggling so hard to talk about, you know, how we should be reaching out to our local comic book shops and supporting them in this time of need. But this has pretty much put everything to a full stop. And it is a little scary, but there is, and I hate to say it for those of you who don't like digital comics, but I will say, from what the rumors are, digital comics for new books are also stopping. But there is digital comics for old books, for us who are staying in for however long we need to. Comixology has added an extra 30 days to their premium. Comixology Unlimited is what it's called. So instead of 30 days, you're going to get 60 days. I also recommend signing up for the Marvel Unlimited app, as well as the DC Universe app. There are tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of books out there for you guys to read. I know that a lot of you, you know, you bulk buy your comics and then you read your top five or whatever, and you leave the rest for later. This is the time to dust off that to-read pile and read them now. There is also, for me, I've been reading the Shonen Jump app. That is also fun. But let's go ahead and, you know, that is really all the comic book news that I have for you guys. You know, we are at a full stop as far as the publishing goes. The biggest question now is, how are they going to release these books afterward? Does this set them back a full 2 months? Are they still going to act like, you know, basically, hey, we're gonna start where we left off and everything go, you know, regular schedule? Or are they going to bulk distribute? It's going to be very odd to know what DC, Warner Brothers, Marvel, Disney, Boom Studios, what all of the publishers are going to decide as far as how to make up the money that they are quote-unquote losing at this time. And that's the one thing that I'm kind of bothered by, is everybody's like, oh, we're losing money. The entire United States is losing money, so you're not losing any money, you're just not making money at this point. So let's go ahead and let's move on to the books. I will say, I'm going to be talking about four books today, that being Action Comics number 1021, Far Sector number 5, The Flash 752, and Wonder Woman 754. Now, I understand that when I said Action Comics 1021, everybody like raised an eyebrow and they're like, wait, this is going to be a Clayton? You know, he's by himself talking about Action Comics number 1021. This is not going to be good for the podcast. Well, I will say it's probably not good for the podcast. Because this book is, I don't know where it's going, and I don't know where Bendis thinks he's taking this book. There is so much confusion over what he is trying to implement with the Red Cloud, with Lex Luthor, with, because this is all supposed to be taking place a day before he reveals his identity as Clark Kent. Now, we have dealt with this, let's see here, the issue 18 was 2 months ago, and we have, like, the hundreds and hundreds of stories that could be told is all before he reveals his identity. So, I don't understand why we're going through this when you have so many stories to talk about for after. You know? It is very odd. The conversations between Connor and Superman in this story did not feel like their characters whatsoever. There comes a time where the Red Cloud is choking out Superman, and Lex Luthor is actually fighting is fighting Connor, and this is the dialogue per, you know, the comic, Superman talking to Red Cloud. Just please save the boy and the bus down the street. They're trapped inside and it's on fire, and this kid is so good. Please don't let good people. And then the last word is super tiny. I can't even read it. Die or kill or... Yeah, I... But anyway, that is horrible dialogue for Superman. Horrible dialogue for Superman. I understand that it's supposed to show desperation. Superman would not talk like that. I'm sorry. And, you know, it's... The fight comes to a full stop afterward. It comes to a full stop because Leviathan thinks he has won over on both the Legion of Doom and the Justice League and Young Justice. Red Cloud seems to be turning into a good guy. And at the same time, also still a bad guy, because at the end it's revealed that she does go back to Robinson... she is Robinson Good. Leonie, Miss Leonie, who is, of course, the owner of the Daily Planet and the leader of the Invisible Mafia. It is so convoluted. I hate the art, like everybody else. And, you know, it's just a waste of pages. It's a waste of a comic. This entire story, it has nothing to do with anything. They're just... Bendis is trying to elaborate more on characters that I don't think anybody cares about. The Red Cloud, Leviathan. And I understand that in Superman, or these, you know, special one-shots that Bendis is putting out, that they're trying to implement more with Robinson Good, and Leonie dealing with the Daily Planet, but it's not going anywhere. It's not doing anything. And it's hurting the book. It's hurting the book so much. The sales on these, on Action and on Superman, are doing horrible. And I genuinely think that hopefully, during this time of, you know, the pandemic and stopping production on comics for now, I really hope that Marvel is having phone conferences, you know, social distancing, and really deciding what they want to do with Bendis. I understand that he has a lot of fun with Naomi and Young Justice and all of his Wonder Comics stuff. Keep him on that. Keep him on that and give somebody else this Action and Superman title, because Superman should be, when it comes to the top five stories or top five sales of DC, I'm not saying all of comics. If you look at the top five of all DC, it should be Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, at least the three, the Trinity, and then it's up in the air for the other two. That's genuinely how I feel. I understand that not even Tomasi and Jurgens were that way, But they were pretty high up there for a long time before they started to dwindle down near the end of their runs. And those stories actually had progression from start to finish. This is regression. Like, Bendis keeps going backwards in his story. He doesn't move forward. So that is the problem that I have with this book, and I have a problem with Superman as well. Everybody knows this. And it's not something that I just want to keep hating. This is actual constructive criticism. This is me being, like, this is me talking sensibly. I understand that I usually just yell out and just, I hate him, blah, 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 blah. But genuinely, I read this book, and I need somebody else to be on this book, so that way Superman and Action Comics can be doing better. And that is better for the books itself, better for DC, and better for the fans, for the actual readers and buyers of this book. And I understand a lot of people are just stopping this title on their pull list. They're not purchasing it online anymore. So it definitely needs to do something different. But let's go ahead. The next book we're going to be talking about is Far Sector number 5. So in this book, I understand that I was talking about how issue number 4 really felt like it was making a lot of progression for the story. I was really starting to get into it, and things were starting to happen. Unfortunately, this doesn't really move the story all too well. I understand that... Ah, man, who is the writer on this book? I always forget her name. Her name is... N.K. Jemison? Or Jameson? Or N.K., sorry, not M.K. N.K. Jemison. I understand that she wanted to do very alien, very out there. Not so much at the level of a Grant Morrison, but she wanted to go out there so that way it felt like a Green Lantern story. Bravo on her, it definitely does. Now, the only problem is, just like how in Action Comics, this doesn't move the story too much. I understand that we get a small background on this Green Lantern character. I almost forgot her name. What is her name? Oh my gosh. I don't remember this Green Lantern's name. Anyway, I know I'm going to get a lot of crap for that later. But we get a small little background on her about how she was in New York. She didn't have a great childhood because of her parents. They seem to have a bad relationship. But something that's very interesting is they mention the attack on the Twin Towers in this book. And I was a little surprised by that. And I saw the motivations from it also with this character and how she and her dad helped save people on the streets. And that motivated her to graduate high school and, you know, go into the military. And eventually, you know, she couldn't save anybody that way. She didn't feel like she could save anybody in the military. So she wanted to go a different route. And she went to Princeton. And she felt that that didn't work out. So she became a police officer. And this is where it takes a really scary turn. And a scary turn in the sense of a reality check for not only comics-wise, but as far as what's been happening in real life. And I understand that this is not something that me and Mark normally talk about. You know, we usually want to keep politics away from this. But they talk about it here, about how her partner, at one point, basically abused his power and beat the crap and possibly killed somebody. And she got basically fired, and she got in trouble for voicing her opinion about how she didn't think that was okay. When she was at this bar, this very unique looking individual comes up to her, talks to her, they end up walking down the street, you know, and it ends up being a guardian and basically saying, hey, I have a job offer for you. So we learn then how she becomes a Green Lantern. but we don't necessarily learn about her special ring, because it doesn't look like any other Green Lantern ring, and that's something that me and Mark have talked about before. There seems to be something different about this ring, and they don't really explain it. And, you know, she does this Green Lantern. I need to learn her name again. I hate having to reference her as she. Let me look really quickly. It is. Oh my gosh. This is annoying me. This is so annoying. I don't know. Oh my gosh. This is so annoying. It still doesn't say. It doesn't say in this whole book. That is so annoying. Anyway, she basically speaks to the wife again of the person who got murdered in the very beginning of this story. Talked about how they, you know, basically saying that there are two different sides of this whole thing, and basically if the Green Lantern is on the right side. And, you know, she says here, in the council chamber, you talked about something we haven't seen in this city since before the emotion exploit. You talked about martyrs, but martyrs are tools for either side in a conflict, so consider why the council might have brought you here and be careful. So, basically, maybe foreshadowing that the council might be using this Green Lantern as a martyr. And that's a scary thought, especially for somebody who is brand new to the DC universe. And I genuinely want to learn more about her, so I don't want her going away. And one of the council members actually leaves her a voicemail at the very end, basically, you know, talking about everything that they've been talking about as a council. But the very last part of the message, he says, "I must go, but I mean to, find out what happened to Thorn, even if it kills me." And of course, she is very concerned as far as what that means, because as far as this emotion exploit, you know, the emotions of this planet have not really been exposed for these individuals living on these planets. So for them to finally be able to, you know, feel something and urge to feel something, when they say, "Oh, even if it kills me," that is something that, okay, you know, we're going a little above and beyond what they should be doing as a council, and she's worried. She's worried that this is going to start some sort of war, some sort of civil war, whatever. So it is interesting. Like I said, it more focuses on her, which I wanted, but it still gives very little information. We understand now how she came to be a lantern, but as far as the aspects of her ring, which are more interesting to me than how she became a lantern, which I still appreciate. You know, history is history, and I understand that every character, as far as the Green Lanterns, we understand why Hal Jordan became a lantern. We understand why John became a lantern. We understand why Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz became a lantern. But, you know, knowing that now, okay, we have that. That's awesome. Now I would really like to understand what is it about this ring that, you know, makes it look so different, and why is she so special that she gets a different ring, you know? So, I digress. You know, it's still a very interesting story, very beautiful looking book. Campbell does an excellent job on every single panel. I don't think anything has a lack of detail. Nothing looks plain. I love the colors on this thing. I love the neon green, just the way they make the green pop in this book. And of course it's on purpose, you know, it's a Green Lantern book, but I absolutely love it. So let's go ahead and move on to our next book. And that next book being The Flash number 752. Now, this, I haven't been keeping up with The Flash. Of course, the last thing I read was 750 and 751. This book still has to deal with the with the monster or villain known as, oh my gosh, what was his name? Paradox. Paradox. Yes, Paradox. He, of course, quote unquote, killed the Flash, and he is now fighting Godspeed, who was a double agent or whatever you want to call him. And we found out at the end of the last issue that Barry had come face to face with his mother. They are now in heaven. Now, I don't know how I feel about this book. I know that there's some times where I'm like, wow, Williamson is, you know, really doing good. He was on such a downhill spiral with, you know, these books or this title, and it just wasn't hitting with me. Now he's starting to get up there. He's starting to really wow me. But now I'm just starting to feel like maybe Williamson is just a really big fan of the Flash TV series, because this feels like a episode of the Flash TV series, which can be a good thing, can be a bad thing. I don't know. I don't understand it. I feel like this has been done before. And when I say this has been done, the whole premise of this is that Barry's mother is, you know, walking him around what this heaven is, and inside heaven, instead of a Flash museum, there is a Flash city, and there's monuments of every single Flash talking about Barry's life. And it's, you know, very heartwarming. He is very grateful for it all, but he sees the Flash family there as well. He sees Wally, he sees he sees Wally, he sees Wallace, and he sees, is her name Jai? The Flash of China. And he's very confused as of why they're there. And I'm not going to get religious, I'm not going to get any of that, but it's just like this weird, like, oh yeah, well, while you're here in heaven, everybody's here for you, you know, whatever. But Barry quickly says, you know, hey, I've been dead before, and I've been on the other side of the Speed Force, and this ain't it. And so he quickly calls out, like, the BS that everything's going on, and quickly, very quickly, Barry's mother turns on him, and she's like, fine, you should have honored what Paradox built you, and it's basically all trap. And like I said, I just feel like this has been done before. I don't know where. If anybody has a reference to what this might be as far as, you know, what's similar or whatnot, please let me know. But Barry ends up thinking, well, every single plane of existence has a frequency, so I'm going to vibrate out of this plane and into my own. And he does, but what he does exactly is he breaks out of that plane, whatever it was, and he goes to quote-unquote hell. Because he says, well, if that was heaven, this must be hell. And it's basically where Paradox was before, about how with everything with the Speed Force and everything done with the Speed Force as far as reality changing, it affects people's body. And it's really weird because he quickly finds out that this is what's happening to him. It's affecting his body. So using the rubble that is all over this place, he builds armor. And it's just very makeshift, it's very weird, and kind of pointless, because he ends up building a computer, he builds a cosmic treadmill, and he starts to run, and basically saying, Iris told me before I left that there is only one person to beat Paradox, and that person being Eobard Thawne, the Reverse Flash. Well, there's always one place that can find him. Because, as far as he knows, Eobard Thawne is dead. But, because of the way the timeline works, there's, you know, the past, the future, wherever, speedsters are able to be anywhere and everywhere at all times, basically, because of how the Speed Force works. And so he says, well, there's always one place I can find Thawne, and that being the night Eobard murdered my mother. And that's where it ends. It very much feels like an episode. It feels like a first episode or a first season episode of The Flash, you know, because that was one thing that Barry always wanted to do: go back and go back and go back to where his mother was murdered. And I don't know. I want Williamson to do good because he had all the ingredients for a really cool story since issue number one of this Flash run. And I don't know how much longer they're going to have Williamson on the Flash. You know, there was a lot of controversy with how long Tom King was on his run. But as far as we know, Flash is the only one that has had a single writer go from one to current as of right now. And it's kind of BS because I want something new. I want something new. I want something to be excited about. And right now, there's really nothing to be excited about. The story with the year one was kind of fun, you know, but it ended up just being Williamson shenanigans by the end. And it bothered me. It really did. And I can't keep up with Williamson's nonsense because he will start one story, he won't finish it, and he'll go on to the other. And I will say, a lot of writers right now are doing the exact same thing. They don't want to finish a story so that way they can finish it later to keep readers interested in reading their story or their comic. But the only problem is, we as readers or fans want to see these books being finished, and we're not seeing any story being finished. We keep seeing more and more starting. And then eventually they're like, oh, well, there's too many complaints of me, you know, getting off the book. Okay, fine, I'll wrap up everything in this one story. It doesn't make sense. And then he starts another one. And so it's really, really bothersome. It's really hurting the book in my mind. I wouldn't say that Flash needs to be in the top five. I could see him being in the top 10 of DC sellers. And right now that is not the case. And that's not the case, what I feel like, for a lot of DC books as far as general. It's usually right now in the top 10, maybe 1 to 3 books of DC will be in the top 10 of sales for each month. And that sucks. As being a DC fan, I am a fan of majority of any and all comics, but my heart will always be with DC, and knowing that they have not changed anything to help their sales, to help their fans with loving these books, it hurts. And I understand that there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes with, you know, with this whole 5G and, you know, what it would have been. And now Dan is gone. I understand that there's a lot of things going on. But like I said before, with Action, I hope that this pandemic gives them time to plan, to reset, and to go forward with something bigger and better. That's what I'm hoping. Now, if that actually happens, who knows? But let's go ahead and move on to our last book of the day, that being Wonder Woman 754. Alright, now this is where things get very confusing for me, because I will admit, I have not been reading Wonder Woman whatsoever, but I needed something to talk about for the podcast. Now, this was just insane. Now, because when I say insane, it was because it was so mind-boggling for me to try to comprehend what in the world is going on. Now, I understand that these characters have been interacting for quite some time. I think I understand Maxima. The only reason why I know Maxima is because of the old school Death of Superman story. She does not look like old Maxima whatsoever. I don't remember Maxima having that orange of skin, but I remember her red hair. And Maxima basically is asking Wonder Woman to help her basically take back the throne. And we learn that the invisible jet can actually turn into an invisible spaceship. I thought that was kind of cool. But this, honestly, was a... This is Steve Orlando. This is straight up from Steve Orlando's, you know, sleeve and his pile of tricks as far as what he does for these books. Now, I will say it was a good story. I enjoyed it. Now, it really hurt me because I haven't been reading Wonder Woman to fully understand the story, fully understand where Wonder Woman is at this time. I do know that there was some things that G. Willow Wilson was doing as far as the relationship between Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor. She broke them up. I felt that that was weird, but I can see Steve Orlando is trying to bring that relationship back together. Because ultimately, this douchebag guy that is ruling under the planet that Maxima is from, I can't remember where what it is, but he is basically talking about how they need to go back to the old ways, and he is the rightful king, and blah-de-blah-de-blah. But eventually, what really ends up being is Maxima is showing to her people that the old rulers of their time were actually lesbians. It was two women that ruled together, and they basically needed to, you know, come to terms that this is how people love. And I thought that was really cool. It was a really cool message, and Maxima got her way. She was able to openly be, you know, show her love for this other individual, who is a girl, of course, who is a woman. And it's really weird because, and I understand that because of Rebirth and New 52 and Dr. Manhattan and Superman Reborn and all of these different things, the timeline isn't great now. But Steve Orlando is still trying to play with these things, because at one point, Maxima and Diana are talking, and Diana says, "You deserve to live your heart, Maxima. I know that all too well." And Maxima says, "You keep saying that, but you deserve nothing different. How many times, Diana?" And she says, "How many times have you set aside your heart for duty?" And it shows her and Superman together, and then it shows her and Steve together. And I, because of the way Superman Reborn and everything that with that happened with Dr. Manhattan, I don't know if the Superman Wonder Woman stuff is still canon. So if somebody could relay that back to me, that would be awesome. But apparently, the bigger and better story, quote-unquote, and I wouldn't say better, but I guess the overall story that Orlando is trying to push through this is there is a Four Horsewomen story that he's trying to do, and one of them is genocide, and these people, I have no idea who they are, they free genocide from this casket, and it looks weird. Like, it looks like something from the Dark Multiverse, I will just say that. Looks cool, has me interested in reading the next issue, but I don't know. Wonder Woman is something that I have had conversations with a lot of people, including my coworker Juice from the Batman News Weekly podcast. We were talking about how for the thousands of years that Wonder Woman has been in man's world, why does she still talk like a Themyscira? Like, why has she not modernized herself, you know? And we wondered if that was the reason why she's not selling as well. Is it because she doesn't make too many connections to the modern woman or to modern society? You know, we appreciate her backstory, her history of a Amazon and, you know, being in Themyscira. But I just think there needs to be something different with Wonder Woman. When you say, "Hey, what's the best Batman story?" People will always tell you a specific story. They'll say, "Oh, that would be Killing Joke. Oh, that would be Endgame with Snyder's Run. Oh, that would be No Man's Land. Oh, that would be," you know, their specific stories. With Superman, you ask the same question. It could be, "Oh, the death of Superman." Oh, it could be whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow. Oh, it could be Earth One. Oh, it could be this. Wonder Woman doesn't really have that. And I want to know why. I want to know why Wonder Woman is a character that is struggling so hard to have this, like, amazing story that just stands out above all the rest. You know, we have these books that relaunch to number ones all the time, and you know, we have new writers that jump on books, and you know, in a Batman story, it can push a new writer and a new story can push Batman to the number 2 to number 4 spot in the monthly sales very quickly. Very quickly. Superman as well. A new writer, a new story, whatever, can push the sales really high up there. With Wonder Woman, a new writer, a new story, doesn't do that at all. And I want to know why. I think that Wonder Woman, as popular as she is, you know, being a, you know, pop culture icon now, especially now with the modern, you know, media, you know, with her movie, I want to know why she hasn't made a giant hit with comics. And I think she deserves it. I don't know who can do that. I don't know whether it be Gail Simone, whether it be a well-thought-out story for G. Willow Wilson, because I was very disappointed with G. Willow Wilson's character writing with Wonder Woman, because she even said her heart wasn't into it. I would tell her as DC, hey, keep writing this, what is she on? She's on the Dreaming book, right? She's on the Dreaming book. I would tell her, hey, really think about what a good Wonder Woman story would be. Because she reimagined Miss Marvel for Marvel. I think she has the same power for Wonder Woman. I genuinely think that she can do that for Wonder Woman. But I don't want her to jump the gun and just be like, yes, I want to write it now. I want her to really think out the story. But who knows? Who knows what, you know, Wonder Woman has in store for, you know, the next year or whatnot. Hopefully, whoever is coming on it next, I can't remember the name of it, or the name of the writer, but I'm really excited because of the artist that's going to be on it. I can't remember his name. See, this is what happens when you're in quarantine. You forget everything. You forget everything that you ever knew, and it's really biting me. It's really biting me, but I digress. I love you all for still listening, if you are still listening. This is the first time that I got to do a solo full four-book show by myself, and it's actually lasting more than 40 minutes, so I implore myself. That is awesome. But Mark will be back next week. I will talk to him. I'm probably going to text him here in a little bit, talk to him about what our plans are for the rest of this month, or technically it's going to be next month when we talk to you guys again, but we will see what we will be doing for the next month. You know, we have been seeing a lot of podcasts shift in, you know, just adapting to what the entertainment industry is doing right now, because a lot of people follow these things and you guys listen. So we want to do what's best for you guys. We want to do our best to work as hard as we can while we are here in the security of our own homes. But yeah, I will get to talking to him pretty soon. We love you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for giving me your time. I know my voice is very annoying when it goes on and 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 on. But yeah, I like I said, I've said this like four times already. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.